It's July 26th. I think we should open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1097. We are officially in subcommittee. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill? Mr. President, why don't you come on up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 1097 permits the Department of Human Services to release the name, date of birth, and date of death of a person whose remains are still in possession of this state. We don't have any amendments before us.
Okay. Mr. President, welcome.
Thank you, Senator Brown, Chair, Rules Committee, members of the Senate Rules Committee. I'm Peter Courtney, State Senator from District 11, which includes portions of Salem.
Hi.
Paul Jervis in Woodburn. And I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 1097. Now, my testimony, I believe, should be before you. I'm not going to read that. I'll take from it bits and pieces. On November 2004, while visiting the Oregon State Hospital, I discovered a small room at the Oregon Hospital grounds. And this building is a room I now call the Room of Forgotten Souls. It contains the small copper canisters of some 3,490 cremated remains. The canisters contained those ashes of people who died between 1914 and 1971 at certain state institutions specifically, and they're listed there for you. Columbia Park Hospital in the Dalles, the Amish State Hospital, which was in Wilsonville, the Fairview Training Center, the State Hospital, State Penitentiary, and the former State Tuberculosis Hospital. All these last institutions were located in Salem. If someone died in one of these state institutions and their bodies were not claimed, the state cremated the body and stored the remains at the state hospital. Earlier this year, I appointed a formal work group to develop recommendations for a memorial and a proper burial and or interment of these remains. The group has already met extensively in the months of March, April, and June, and they are gathering information from former and current state hospital patients and others about what they think would be an appropriate memorial. Interesting enough, the KMD architects were the ones that handed down the master plan back in May. Also recommended a memorial for the dignified perpetual care of the remains. Just recently, I came across yet another issue that we're faced in this state, my fellow senators. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs recently asked the Oregon State Hospital for a list of names of people whose remains are stored at the hospital. The department wants to know if there are any veterans' remains because they can provide interment in one of Oregon's national cemeteries as a veteran's benefit. But the medical privacy laws that exist prevent that information being made available, so enter Senate Bill 1097. This will permit the Oregon Department of Human Services to disclose the names and dates of birth and death, if known, of the people whose remains are stored at the state hospital for purposes of interment or burial only. We are not asking for any medical information or other life history, only the names and dates of birth and death, if known. Such disclosure will allow the Veterans Department to determine if there are any veterans' remains and will allow the state to list the names when it creates a memorial. Thank you for allowing me to come here today in support of this measure. I might add, just by way of additional information, which is critical, there are federal privacy laws that are also still at bay here. This bill could not, as you know, overturn those laws, but this speaks to state laws that exist. With that, Chair Brown or others here who could speak also to the possibility of whether or not some of those canisters are containing the names of honorable discharged veterans. So thank you very much, Chair, and members of the Senate Rules Committee for allowing me to come here today and testify in support of Senate Bill 1097.
Thank you.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm the director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. When we learned that these remains were from state institutions, we determined that there was a very good possibility that out of over 3,400 remains, that there could easily be honorably discharged veterans who are eligible for interment in one of the three national cemeteries contained here in Oregon. During the time frame that these individuals would have been serving, They could have gone as far back as the Civil War and as recent as the Dominican intervention in 1965. There were 22 campaigns, interventions, revolutions, or wars in which Oregonians serving in the military service could have fought, and as a result of that service may have gotten what was called in World War I shell shock, what we commonly know today as PTSD. Sometimes that leads to intervention with a public safety agency and then results in commitment to an institution. If the person dies and there is no next of kin, then we need to have the ability to research based on name, date of birth, whether or not they were an honorably discharged veteran. We have worked with the National Cemetery Administration. They have determined that there is room for the interment of these remains, and then all that would be left once someone was identified as an honorably discharged veteran would be their transportation via military escort to the appropriate national cemetery for internment. The available space is there, the opening and closing of the grave, the perpetual care, and a government headstone or marker, along with a burial flag and presidential memorial certificate, are available at no cost to the taxpayers. Our department is staffed to do this project, and we, along with the National Cemetery Administration of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs, would do so to assure a dignified burial for these people who have served their country. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Gross, you wish to add anything?
No, thank you.
All right. Any questions for the panel?
Thank you very much. We really appreciate your hard work on this issue. Mr. Hammer? No amendments, correct.
Madam Chair, members of the Senate Rules Committee, I'm Maynard Hammer, Deputy Superintendent of Oregon State Hospital. I'm here to testify in support on behalf of the Department of Human Services for Senate Bill 1097. As the President indicated, there might well be some federal barriers still, but this would go a long way toward helping us deal with barriers in state law, and I think no one is more interested in finding a fitting disposition of these remains than we at Oregon State Hospital and in Department of Human Services. Where we have them is not appropriate. We'd love to be able to work with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and I assure you we'll leave no stone unturned, but we do have to deal with the federal law, and I think this sets a good stage for doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Hammer. Any questions for Mr. Hammer? Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing and open the work session on Senate Bill 1097. There are no amendments. Senator Shields. Senator Shields has moved Senate Bill 1097 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none. So ordered. Thank you. And we'll have the Senate President carry this proposal. All right. Let's move forward to House Bill 3159. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the bill? Senator Johnson, do you want to come forward? Ms. Adamson-Harris, do you want to come forward? Anybody else? Should do it? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3159A amends the statutes governing product liability civil actions based on damages related to asbestos. The bill would exempt certain contractors from liability.
Okay. Hello. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I'm the state senator from District 16. I appreciate the opportunity to appear before the committee. I was part of a negotiating group trying to resolve two bills related to asbestos. We met twice. We had all the interested parties at the table. In the second meeting, the group concluded that if agreements could be reached on at least one of the two bills, that the bill would proceed. And while we're still working diligently on the remaining bill. Language is now in legislative council. The Oregon trial lawyers and AGC have agreed, and that is 3159 before you today, and I would urge your favorable consideration.
Great. You wish to add anything?
Madam Chair, for the record, Jessica Harris-Adamson with Associated General Contractors. We appreciate you looking at this bill, and unless you have any questions, I just urge your passage.
A7 amendments?
Okay. Yes.
All right. Anybody have any questions for these two?
Madam Chair, that was just it. They have agreement on the A7s.
That's my
yes.
Answer.
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry. I looked like a, Madam Chair, Senator Ringo, I looked like a deer in the headlights because I couldn't hear her.
Oh, okay.
No, that's okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both very much.
And just for the record, it turned out that the language that went forward is the Oregon trial lawyers offered language that was part of the negotiation.
Great. All right. Let's close public hearing. Open work session.
Move the dash.
Sarah Atkinson has moved the dash A7 amendments to House Bill 3159. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing, seeing none. So ordered. Senator Atkinson.
Move the bill as amended to the floor for the pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson would move House Bill 3159 as amended with the dash A7 amendments to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Ordered. Senator Atkinson, would you like to carry?
Or Senator Johnson.
Senator Johnson. Sure. Senator Johnson, would you like to carry? Okay. All right. Done. All right. All right. Let's open a public hearing. Oh, let's move to 3184. Do you want to have this?
Oh, sure.
Come on out. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3184. We're going to do some pinch hitting here. Is your last name Taylor? Did I just make that up? It is Taylor, right? It is Taylor. Okay.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3184 came to the Senate as a fix to entrepreneurial services provided by ESDs. The House sent it over kind of ensuring that ESDs wouldn't do entrepreneurial services unless it was under specific circumstances. However, we have the A3 amendment, which removes the previous language and replaces the bill with Senate Bill 765, which was the comprehensive ESD bill that the Senate approved. And then there are a couple of provisions that were considered in Senate Bill 415, which was sent down to the Revenue Committee. And those provisions are Sections 30, 31, and 32 of the A3 amendment. And what those do is they change the funding formula for ESDs. Instead of receiving 5% of the state school fund, they would receive 4.75%. And instead of the $1 million floor for some of the smaller ESDs, they would then receive $950,000.
All right. Thank you. Oh, and Senator Worker, would you like to join us?
Sure.
Come on out.
The power of television in the Capitol, Madam Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. Loved this amendment. Loved the bill as it went out. 765, and I also appreciate the amendments, the dash or the section 30.
How about if I ask you, help you out and let you breathe for a minute by letting you answer a few questions?
Be happy to.
Senator Walker, it's my recollection that you were chair of the Senate Education Committee. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And
ooh,
in your
I feel
role
like a
as
witness at trial, this
well,
is great. This is easy.
I'm sort of out of practice. In your in your role as the Senate chair of the Education Committee, you worked on Senate Bill 765, and it's my recollection that you appointed a work group, which was headed by Senator Cruz, to put Senate Bill 765 together. Is that correct?
That too is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Is your breath coming back now?
Yes, I'm okay. Just totally there.
All right.
breathing normally.
And what do you see the goal of Senate Bill 765?
To get more money into the classroom.
Okay.
To give school districts more say in how the ESD budget is set. That's what we did with the governance piece. And Ms. Taylor, who is probably one of the most awesome committee administrators in the building, served as my committee administrator and staffed the work group with Senator Cruz, and they did a fabulous job. This was many, many hours of work. We had a very broad section of group of people who worked on this bill. We presented it, had a discussion with the House members about a week ago, I think. So they are familiar with the bill, and they're probably just moving a little slower than I would like, but you know, they're giving it some thoughtful work. We had invited members of the House to be on the work group of the House Education Committee, and no one took us up on that other than the committee administrator did attend. So we did make an effort, Madam Chair, to include the House in the discussions as we created the legislation, and so they were aware of what we were working on. And I had met with the chair of the Education Committee in the House, and we discussed this bill, and that we would take this. It was agreed the Senate would take the lead on it. So the Senate did do its part, and with the able work Senator Cruz, I think we did an excellent job, and I do like the additional pieces about the funding mechanisms and the funding formula. The goal here, Madam Chair, is to not do away with ESDs. ESDs provide a very vital service in the education system. The goal is to make them more efficient, to get more money directly into the classroom, to make sure those ESD dollars are not diverted to things that are inappropriate. So there's more accountability in this bill than you've ever seen before. And I do like that piece. And we just give school districts more of a voice. There is not, and I repeat, there is not a division and a lopping off of ESDs. We're allowing them to have a voice in what happens to them. I prefer to work that way. It would have been easy to draw the line and say this is how it'll be done and then try to ram it through the legislature. But I'm more of a person who likes to work with people rather than have it done unto you is, you know, get involved so that you can be a part of the changes that are coming into your life. And that's what we did. I think the only probably major disagreement from the Association of ESDs was over the governance piece. I don't think they really objected to too awfully much more in the bill, though I could be wrong, but that was my sense. But to me, that was the most valuable piece, one of the most valuable, and also the school districts really like that. So there we are, and Ms. Taylor has an infinite knowledge base about this bill, and I can go into it in detail, but I don't think we need to unless you have further questions.
Questions? Senator Ringo.
Well, I just want to say that I appreciate where Senator Walker's gone on this. I think, I mean, when her part of the bill was on the Senate floor, I said I think it's a good start, and it is a good start. It's a very good start. My school district, about a year ago, went on the record saying that there were about $3 million worth of allocations that could have been allocated to them that they got nothing for. $3 million worth. And I just want to say I disagree with your contention that ESDs aren't necessary. I think for the largest districts in our state, they're not necessary. They're a duplication of administration that leads to a lot of waste. And I believe that ESDs provide essential economies of scale for the mid to smaller districts. But that's a debate for another day.
Madam Chair and Senator Ringo, I agree with you. That is probably a debate for another day, and you and I have a fundamental difference on that because I do think ESDs provide some very vital services. Some of the frontier districts, the smaller districts, they find more value, but even the larger districts find value in what the ESD provides.
Well, Madam Chair, not to have a full debate right here, but obviously the big districts will use the resources that ESDs provide because they're available.
Mm-hmm.
The question is that the most efficient way for those services to be delivered?
My point is, it's not. But for the larger districts, they would be better served by getting the money directly because they could provide their own services. And we'll stop the debate. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair and Senator Ringo, I appreciate that. We've had a lot of discussions about that. One of the things about 765 that I like that was just the brainchild of this work group is to create regional ESDs, otherwise known as RESAs, and that's to further make sure that we're delivering economies of scale and we have more accountability, and I like that. I like that a lot. That piece is a very good piece. So. Well, I'm glad to see you're trying once again to move this bill.
Senator Shields.
Yeah. Senator Walker, in the bill on page 2, line 36, it talks about ESDs acting as a regional hub for school districts and community colleges. And as an old member of a community college board, I'm wondering what community colleges are in there and if they really belong in there.
Madam Chair and Senator Shields, I see the community college people have been talking to you because I understand they have some concerns about being in here.
I come out of my own background.
And your own background.
College.
But and that's true. And I understand that community colleges have indicated that they don't like being involved. But actually, I think that services can be provided. I don't think we're... I don't think we're going to step on the toes of anyone, but it's a regional hub. Act as a regional hub for school districts and community colleges. So this session, we had Senate Bill 300 that the governor has now signed, which allows high school students to take community college courses and university courses while they're still high school students. So it's a seamless education system. I think that's where we're headed, is a seamless education system, and I think acting as a regional hub for that, including community colleges in that, is important to the seamless education system. That would be my answer.
Any further questions? Thank you, Senator Walker, for joining us.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Suhanek, Mr. Myers, and Ms. Smith.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Julie Suhanek. I'm with the Oregon Community College Association, which represents Oregon's 17 community colleges and over 330,000 students. And I am testifying to ask that the bill be amended to remove three words. If you look at the dash A3 amendments on page 3, on lines 11 and 12, it is that language that Senator Shields and Senator Walker just previously discussed. We would like to see the words "and community colleges" removed, particularly because we believe the way the language is written is that it mandates that the RESAs are the technological hubs for the community colleges, and that interferes with our local control. We believe that we agree with Senator Walker that we're trying to move towards a seamless education, and we are more than willing to work with the ESDs and the RESAs and the other sectors in a seamless fashion as partners, but we do not want to have one of the other sectors be mandated to be a technological hub for our locally controlled community colleges. Be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. You had this amendment drafted.
I just need a note.
Okay. Ms. Smith. Or Mr. Myers, whoever wants to go over.
What was the answer to your question?
I just need a note.
Oh, you need a note.
Thank you.
I didn't quite think.
For the Mr. record. Myers, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Rob Myers. I live in Condon, and I'm here on behalf of the Five Frontier Rural ESDs. First, I'd like to make it very clear that the only reason this room isn't completely filled with county judges, county commissioners, and every other elected official in seven counties is that we got notice of this hearing 2 hours ago, and it takes them anywhere from 8 to 16 hours to get here. If they were here, I can assure you that they would oppose this bill unequivocally for all the reasons that I'm about to explain to you from our perspective. House Bill 3184 would provably reduce the quality and quantity of educational services that are delivered to frontier rural kids and likely urban kids as well. It would also cause irreparable harm because in areas of the frontier rural Oregon, you cannot separate education from the economy. They are significant contributors to and supporters of the sustainability of local economies. And I also suggest that further centralization of power in education service delivery is not in the best interest of Oregon students anywhere. I want to give you a couple of examples, and you've probably heard a lot of these before, but I'm going to do it anyway, just to reiterate them. Why the Frontier Rural ESD service delivery is somewhat different than it is elsewhere in the state. Oregon's five Frontier Rural ESDs serve 5,644 students spread across 30,000 square miles. There are 17,000 more students in the Beaverton, Hillsboro school districts than there are people in the 30,000 square miles served by the Frontier Rural ESDs. The average salary of the five Frontier Rural ESD superintendents is $55,000.
I'm sorry, I forgot Representative Dallin was in the room. So I'm going to have him come up and join you, if that's okay.
I'll be more than happy to defer to Representative Dallin.
No, just keep going.
Keep going.
We'll bring him up. Okay. It makes him feel like he's loved.
Thank you.
I'm so sorry.
I feel loved.
You are loved. One job lost in the Frontier Rural counties has the equivalent economic impact of over 300 job losses in Multnomah County. Three of the five Frontier Rural ESDs, due to the differentiation between their funding floor and the amount of tax revenues they generate, actually return money to the state. This bill proposes sweeping changes in organization and structure of ESDs with little or no regard for the very real differences in the way ESDs necessarily operate. It's a bill that supposedly solves the ESD problem without first identifying what that problem is, or whether or not such a problem actually exists. To suggest, as this bill does, that it represents a reasonable process through which an equitable solution can be implemented completely ignores the glaring fact that no specific problem requiring such a solution has been articulated clearly or otherwise. I can further state without equivocation that the Frontier ESDs are not a part of whatever problem might exist. Collectively, they represent 2.7% of the overall ESD state school fund allocation. Their revenues constitute only 3.9% of the six largest ESDs in the Northern Willamette Valley. Now, that doesn't mean, and it shouldn't mean, that the Frontier ESDs would not be willing participants in a positive and constructive process to provide better educational opportunities for all of Oregon's students. Between them, they provide high-quality educational services to Frontier Rural students, and nobody performs that specific task any better. That doesn't mean that they don't constantly strive to improve the level of service delivery. To that end, they created an ORS 190 by intergovernmental agreement about 2 years ago that maximizes the extent to which they're able to aggregate their resources. And a shared resource model is the Frontier Rural equivalent of economies of scale, because without scale, it's hard to create any economies. We should constantly be looking for better, more effective and efficient ways to deliver educational services. We, in fact, have a solemn obligation to the children of Oregon to do just that. But House Bill 3184 doesn't represent a methodology for any such effort. It's fatally flawed legislation that will not produce any demonstrable savings or efficiencies, and it will probably reduce the quality and quantity of services to Oregon students regardless of where they live. One example of how out of touch this bill is with the realities of ESD operations is a reduction by $50,000 of the Frontier ESD funding amount, the funding floor. This reduction is stipulated to be applied exclusively to administration. None of the five small ESDs, the five Frontier Rural ESDs, have more than two people in administration. They have a superintendent and a deputy clerk. That's it. If the average salary of the superintendent is $55,000, then you're going to eliminate roughly half of any administrative support an ESD, Frontier Rural ESD, receives from the state. North Central ESD and Grant ESD share a superintendent. The superintendent in Wallawa is the Wallawa ESD superintendent. He's the Troy School District superintendent and performs business manager functions for two other Wallawa County districts. And he's paid $49,000 a year to do that. So in order to save $50,000, the state of Oregon is going to pay $250,000 to replace the services they lose that he currently provides for $50,000. And that's just one example. As I said before, the Frontier Rural ESDs would be more than willing participants in any process that would result in the better delivery of educational services to students all over Oregon. But first, we have to understand why it is that that process is being convened. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll go to Representative Dahlem. I'm really sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would defer to Rob. He understands the ESDs in my district perhaps better than I do, and I want to take a more global look at this. One of the things, if I might introduce myself as a former superintendent, a former board member, a former consumer of ESD services, a former crafter of ESD services, both as a board member and as a superintendent, I see this bill, House Bill 3184, in its amended form as a solution looking for a problem. The original bill, House Bill 3184, was an accountability piece that would give local voices to school, or a voice to local school districts when ESDs engaged on entrepreneurial ventures. Some of the entrepreneurial things that ESDs do are wonderful. The scale that they can bring to solving problems is excellent. But on occasion, those ventures got a little bit bigger than the local district could understand. The idea of the legislation at that time, or in its original form, was to put the local school boards in the loop and provide accountability when we started out on some sort of a venture. We now, with the amendments, have a major threat to what I see as the democracy of our communities. We are about to change a very broad-based institution with an elected body that weighs and discusses and determines how local solutions should be applied to local problems. This would be a revolutionary change. They've not been heard from. I think a change of this nature has to be vetted, particularly with those local officials. I might also say, as a superintendent, I served in three different ESDs. And every time I go to say something about ESDs, I have to check with somebody that is familiar with all the ESDs that presently exist, because their way of tackling problems, their way of finding solutions, are seldom the same from one to another. The large schools that are served by ESDs have a whole different set of problems that need to be vetted, that need to be fixed, and there may be a better way to spend the money that goes to ESDs, but I do not see this bill as answering that problem. I also find that in the communities that I have served, we look to the ESDs to provide us special help with special problems. We didn't look at them so much as a service provider as an insurance program. When we had an autistic child in one of the larger districts I served, we had no program. It was to the ESD we went, and there we found a solution to our problem. I would also say that the differences in the between rural, urban, and frontier, as has been pointed out, are so great that a one-size-fits-all solution damages more than it helps. We started out in the beginning of the session. In fact, I had conversations with Senator Ringo. What problem are we trying to solve? And I'm still trying to get my arms around the problem. And I think there is a better solution. And I think a pilot program might provide a better solution. A pilot program that would give rural, frontier, and large school district ESDs an opportunity to see what might work before we bathe the whole state in what could be a fool's errand. There is not, nor can there ever be, a universal solution to a problem that is generated at one ESD. It just will not work that way. I am in support of the original House Bill 3184, but the amendments make it something so different, something that needs a thorough vetting, something that needs an understanding of what the solution provides, that I can do nothing but stand opposed to the amendments. Thank you very much for the time.
Thank you. Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tricia Smith. I represent Oregon School Employees Association. OSEA represents employees and education service districts throughout the state, and I'm here today to offer opposition to the amendments to House Bill 3184. We testified in opposition to House Bill 765 in the Senate and the House, and I apologize for offering you as my written testimony the testimony I offered the House, State, and Federal Affairs Committee a few days ago on 765, the testimony is still pertinent, although the name of the chair and the committee and the date are not. So please forgive me for not having the time to update it with today's date and chair. OSCA supports the original House Bill 3184 because it addresses what we consider to be gaps in ESD governance and accountability statutes that have allowed some ESDs to make imprudent fiscal decisions contrary to the best interests of students, taxpayers, and the public. However, this amendment does nothing to improve upon House Bill 3184. Indeed, it eliminates the language that the original bill had within it and replaces it with a new structure for ESDs. This new structure that is offered to you in this amendment, we find several concerns with. And first, it does little to improve the problems that have been the subject of public scrutiny recently, and instead focuses on a consolidation process for ESDs and a new governance structure for them, for the succeeding education service agencies, that we believe focuses them away from services to students and instead and eliminates public input in ESD budgeting and decision making. Merely making ESDs bigger will not cause them to operate more appropriately or efficiently, nor will those goals be achieved by eliminating public participation in the ESD process. If you'll read Sections 2 and Section 9, it's interesting. I didn't have to change even the section numbers in my testimony. They add new requirements that ESDs must meet in order to continue as education service agencies. And if you will read those, they appear to us to be very onerous for some ESDs. At a minimum, in order to prove to the Department of Education that they should continue as these education service agencies, they have to show the department that they can do a number of things, that they have the knowledge and ability within the ESD to do a number of things, whether or not the school districts within their component area want them to do those things. So before they ever become an education service agency, they have to show that they can, that they have a sufficient number of employees, for example, to provide accounting services to school districts and to provide oversight of school district fiscal practices. That may or may not be an important component for the school districts that the ESD serves. But whether or not it is, under this statute or under this bill, they would have to have those employees and that expertise before they could ever begin the discussions with their component districts. There are many such requirements in Sections 2 and Section 9 of the bill that ESDs, if they want to continue as education service agencies, would have to meet, and I would suggest to you that they may be appropriate for some, they may not be appropriate for all, and it should not be the Department of Education that is making the determination about whether or not these ESDs should continue. We also believe that these sections force ESDs to begin to serve two masters rather than one. Currently, under Oregon law, ESDs are supposed to work with their component school districts to develop their budgeting plan so that it serves those component school districts. Under these sections, ESDs will have to serve two masters, as I said, both the component school districts that they have always served and now the Department of Education, because they will be required under Section 9 to be a liaison between the Department of Education and their component school districts. There's no language in the bill about how they will manage competing interests and how they will serve those two masters. Section 2 also puts in place requirements that would require the consolidation of smaller ESDs merely by the fact that they cannot, as Rob explained to you, they cannot provide the minimum amount of expertise and staffing necessary under this bill to continue. OSCA does not support the concept of consolidation of ESDs unless there's an identified specific operational improvement in education services to students in the district served by the ESD. There's nothing in this language that we believe would provide that to students. In fact, in Section 2, the ability to provide services to students is the last requirement rather than the first requirement. The amendment also doesn't eliminate the ability of ESDs to enter into any entrepreneurial services that they may choose, and we thought that it was appropriate to put into place the language in the original House Bill 3184 dealing with entrepreneurial services. And finally, the amendment sets up a new governance structure for successor education service agencies that moves the public even further from the decision-making process in ESDs by eliminating the elected board and replacing that board with school district board members that are elected from school district boards and other directors that are appointed by school district board members. With more than $500 million going to ESDs, we think that moving the public away from that accountability is a bad idea, and we were hoping for more accountability, not less, from the public. We also suggest to you that it sets up a kind of a circular motion in that the language requires the ESD to be able to do performance audits of school districts. It also requires that their plan for the year be adopted by their budget committee, which is made up of school district superintendents from their component districts. So this is getting, I know this is kind of complicated for me to say, but so you have a requirement to do performance audits of your school districts, and you have superintendents of those school districts deciding what your job is for that year. If performance audits are on the table, it seems odd that the people being audited are the ones making the decisions about the audit. We don't think that's the best way to do performance audits of school districts. We also think that there are some new things in this amendment that aren't included in my written testimony. One of them is the change in the funding formula for ESDs and the reduction of funding to ESDs. We've not heard any testimony that indicated that this would help ESDs or even school districts in providing better services to children. We do know that it will create a lot of havoc in the next biennium in ESDs as they try to redo and refigure how they're going to provide the services to school districts that they have committed to provide to districts. And then the last thing is that the bill provides language which allows ESDs to be wall-to-wall bargaining units. It changes PECPA in Section 27 to allow ESDs to be exempt from the ban on what's called a wall-to-wall bargaining unit. That is that an ESD can have one bargaining unit rather than two bargaining units, one for certified staff and one for classified staff. Currently in ESDs, we have some ESDs are wall-to-wall units and some are not. And the current language prohibits new wall-to-wall units. This exempts ESDs from that prohibition. We're not sure why. We think it might be a good thing or a bad thing depending on how it works out in a couple of years, but we do know that there will be a significant amount of labor confusion and discussion if this language goes into place and mergers begin, as the employees within those districts decide how their bargaining units will be structured. So we would suggest you put the amendment away, go back to the original bill, and pass it out.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Madam Chair.
Sam Ringo.
Thank you. I wanted to respond to Representative Dallin, and I do remember our conversation, and I know that you have an interest in working on this. You said that this was, in some ways, a solution in search of a problem. And from my perspective, the ESDs, there are some very distinct problems. And they may not be in your district, but they are in my district. And I do appreciate your raising that difference, that distinction, that ESDs, they have different features. But my ESD, their headquarters is an $8 million Class A office space building that has space for 200 people to work there.
200.
And those are people not in the classroom. And so purpose number one is to get more money in the classroom. And so at the same time, this ESD has this palace Hillsborough School District is lopping 17 days off its school year. And here the Northwest ESD is just floating in money. Okay, I mean, it's unacceptable. It's unacceptable. Number two is ESDs need a defined mission. In my opinion, ESDs are organizations in search of a mission. Oh, gee, what shall we do? Shall we engage in this entrepreneurial activity? Maybe we ought to do this. Oh, community colleges. Maybe we can create liaisons with community colleges. It's goofy. It's just goofy. These organizations, we throw 5% of our money at them and then say, gee, I wonder, let them figure out what they ought to do to spend their money. And then the third thing is accountability. I do think accountability has been sorely lacking. That's why we've had these little scandals all over the state, including in my ESD. And this is at least an effort to achieve that accountability. So I just think we've got to do something on ESDs. My hope would be, when I'm working on this, is to do something that would focus on the large districts. Frankly, I could care less about the frontier ESDs. There's not enough money that goes there to make a difference. Really, you look at the budgets of the ESDs. I mean, your budgets are down $1 million or $2 million for the ESD budget, and ours are just so much larger that I would like to have seen a bill that would have focused on the larger districts, scale back the ESDs, and getting more money in the classroom. And what they do in John Day or Ontario, Morrow County, God bless you, keep doing it. Anyway, that's my comment.
If I may, I believe that we do have a very different situation when it comes to large school districts. And that argument, whichever ESD I have been a member of, has always been. In fact, we have some large school districts, large by my standards, Senator. The Hood River School District received direct flow-through. And the issue that we have, or that we had in Region 9 ESD, was what was their fair percentage of the flow-through? Because the ESD serves also a function of providing insurance for the small schools in that district. So that problem, I mean, there are a myriad of other solutions. I did not see Senate Bill 765 addressing the large school issue. And I would leave the solution of large schools and would concur with it when large schools come up with it. As far as the mission statement, the ESDs that I'm familiar with, and again, I'm very reluctant to speak to any of the ESDs I've not been a member of, because I've been in three and have found them to operate completely differently. But their mission statement is defined, in effect, by the resolution services that member boards agree to have. And again, when I turn to large schools, those mission statements, I remember one time in a very, very, very small school wanting to purchase cooperatively, and I was the only school that had one case, and I swear, of strawberry jelly on the cooperative purchase. That mission doesn't fit very well for the large schools. But there is a mission, and I think we should offer large schools, because they have capacity. They have capacity far beyond what the little schools can do. And with a thorough vetting and with time to put something together, that is a legitimate concern. And you and I talked about that. I don't see this as the vehicle for getting us there. Anytime we can put money into the classroom, anytime that we can remove a layer of administration or a layer of classroom teachers or support people, I will line up with you. Accountability, I think ESDs are as accountable as their boards make them. Some have a great deal of faith in their superintendents or their administrative team. Others, maybe not. But I think the original bill did provide some accountability when people went off on a... And we also had another piece of legislation that eliminated the golden parachutes. And both of those were good. I look forward to an opportunity to sit down and put together and craft legislation that will be a solution to the big school, small school, urban, rural differences.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to just ask the panel, are there any of the small ESDs, particularly those in the frontier areas, that can get over the bar of requirements for ERISA?
Requirements for?
Creating a regional ESD, or regional education service.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, that's a good question. And I'm going to give you an answer that probably is not exactly what you're looking for, but I think you could look at it one of two ways. Either they wouldn't meet the bar because the bar is a subjective issue, or they would meet it because it's a subjective analysis. So it's not, capacity is not clearly defined. It wasn't clearly defined in 765. It's not clearly defined in 3184 as amended. So that leaves it then up to, I guess, as I said before, a subjective analysis of whether or not they have the capacity. I would submit to you, frankly, that they do, because they can do almost everything that it says that needs to be done there, maybe on a different scale. The question, as Ms. Smith alluded to earlier, was, do they need to do it? In terms of a requirement from the school districts in their areas, do the school districts require them to do those kinds of things? And the answer is many times no. So why do you need to have the capacity to do something that doesn't need to be done?
Madam Chair.
Secretary.
I think that it'd be no secret to folks in this room that I'm pretty sensitive about the issue of not disempowering the smallest, most rural ESDs, simply because I've had to drive the same miles and cross the same canyons and try to deal with the same time and distance issues that are a feature of the ESD daily workload. And I thought the thing that I heard here today that was compelling is that making those districts larger isn't going to solve any of the problems that we have. I'm certainly sensitive to the idea that there are questions of whether or not the resources are getting to the classroom in the larger districts. And Senator Ringo and I had hours of discussion about that during the interim. I think there is a problem there. But I think the problem that we really have that isn't being discussed here is not that some of these ESDs are too small to matter, because if that was the case, there'd be an exemption for the smallest ESDs in this amendment. And you just leave them alone to deal with the issues of time and distance. And after all, they're such a tiny fraction of the total, there's no reason to scoop them up in this bill. But that isn't an issue. It's not that they're too small to matter. It's that there's too many of them to manage. The real problem here is that the Department of Education doesn't want to have 20 sets of contracts to administer. And that's why we're looking at the idea of possibly reducing the number by consolidating them into RESAs. That is an interesting problem, but it's not necessarily a problem for service delivery in the classroom. It's a problem of administration from the Department of Education to the ESDs. I have no justification for that I can make reasonable to disempower those small, remote ESDs that are such a tiny fraction of these programs that they amount to a couple of percentage points. They ought to be exempted from this bill. Or the amendment ought to just go away and we should return to the original bill. But I don't disagree with those who believe we ought to have a real good interim look at what the purposes of ESDs are and how well they deliver services and how accountable the money is being spent or not. And I cannot sit before this committee or this panel and say that there haven't been scandals. The Union Baker ESD, I think, enters the legends, the annals of the legends of stupidity and greed. It will be held up as the epitome of failure for generations, I think. And part of that responsibility lies with a legislature who asked for entrepreneurialism and then forgot to define what that meant. And we just turned people loose on the idea that they were supposed to go out and make money where they could and then deliver the goods back to the ESD. And it turned into a debacle of legendary proportions. I propose that we don't make the same mistake again, because we're knee-jerking to what was an anomaly in the situation, but instead recognize that local citizens looked deeply into those budgets, got very angry, and insisted that those issues of accountability come to the media and to the legislature's attention. That's what happened here, is the system works exactly like it's supposed to. Local school district people drilled into the scandal and blew it up, and changes the result. But, Madam Chair, I could not in good conscience support the amendment. I hope other members of the committee will feel that this is an issue that we need to deal with in the interim, but not by forcing these kind of sweeping changes.
Thank you, Senator Farrell. I appreciate your comments. I was just talking with Ms. Taylor about the work group that Senator Cruz chaired, which met several times, And it's my understanding there were no folks from large ESDs on the work group, that there were folks from South Coast, from Lake and Douglas ESDs. Obviously, there was not one from Frontier. That's a concern, but we couldn't obviously put everyone on the work group. And we would be happy to talk to Senator Cruz about his thinking in terms of who he got involved. But there was a representative requested to attend from Hillsborough ESD, but they were not able to attend on a regular basis. In terms of the entrepreneurial concerns that you have about that piece, I think it's pretty well spelled out in Section 12 of the -A3 amendments. I think it's fair to say that this bill proposes more restrictive and more professional constrictions for ESDs, if that's your concern. So I would commend you to look at Section 12 of the bill. Any further questions for this particular panel? Thank you. We appreciate you joining us. We are not going to move the bill forward today. Mr. Rose, and then Ms. Fleming, could you come up to talk a little bit about the bill as well? Thank you. Mr. Rose, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Someone in the back room that I walked up here told me to keep it short. For the record, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ozzie Rose. I reside at 1323 Jordan Drive South, and I represent the Oregon Association of Education Service Districts, the organization that has all 20 of them as members. I find we are opposed to the amendments. And then after, once I say that, and I'll tell you why, but I also find myself, I really want to make things better than they are, and much of what gets said up here, there are things that ought to be said about how to turn that into something better, but we don't get that luxury quite often in this process. We do need to develop a strong, effective regional support system for districts, large and small, as they address the challenges of serving every kid, making every kid successful. That's a challenge that districts didn't have a decade ago. And yet, if you go back and look at the concept of regional services, they've changed over time as the mission of schools have changed over time. And today, with the demands of NCLB and the demands that you as a body place on performance, it raises a whole different set of issues and needs that have been there in the past. And we believe that that's going to happen through some kind of regional support. Unfortunately, every effort to get in this discussion falls down as soon as somebody raises the ugly concern that you might rechange boundaries and there might be fewer or more or whatever, and all the ability to have a very good discussion after that deteriorates pretty rapidly. And that's one reason the association started out a year ago when I came back to Oregon and went to work for them, to sit down and try to answer the question, what is it we're supposed to be doing over the next 25 years in terms of contributing to the total educational enterprise? And the first three pages of the bill are essentially from a paper that the ESD superintendents wrote. What is the mission, what are the things they ought to do, administrative service, performance improvement, technology, and special needs students. And then what is the capacity you need in each of those areas? And I disagree with the testimony that there is no way to tell that they have that capacity. You can tell. And we have to provide that capacity. And we have to find a way to provide it. And there's one part of the bill that everybody jumps over that talks about requiring the local districts and the ESD to develop a local service plan annually and show how all the needs of the districts are going to get met, whether they're provided by the ESD or some other ESD or the large district in the area or whatever. But there are needs, especially in the areas of testing and performance and meeting the demands that are being placed on local school districts. All of that stuff is good, and it lays out a mission and a different way of talking about it. Now, not all ESDs are going to be REESs under this plan. In fact, there may not be any change in the borders of ESD. So if you'll notice, you get to the point where it tells the superintendent. By the way, one of the problems of the bill now is the timeline to lay out and get new borders, new numbers, and so forth by next March is too short. But the process to get there required local district involvement in discussion and requires the state superintendent to give them three options. Status quo, some recent model, or a recent model, or some combination of their own. But that it would be built by the interest of the local districts in terms of how do you get your needs met. And that's the fundamental issue behind this. Unfortunately, it gets lost in the debate over whether you're going to, how far are you going to drive, and a variety of things. We don't ever get any chance to really talk about the actual duties and how a new model would look. Nobody's ever tried to look at the new model. We get that there's 200 people in a building. There's nothing wrong with having 200 employees if the 200 employees are all servicing local districts and the districts are getting what they want. But we never get to that point. We are opposed to the bill because of the timelines and because the governance structure. We're tipping over a governance structure and going to a model in which they're elected by local boards. And there is some rationale for that, to give the boards or local districts more say about what ESDs do. Unfortunately, we haven't put any real effort in how do you get the kind of election set up, how do you do away with... Have you heard enough, Senator?
No, I'm just really struggling, Mr. Rose, because I know this has been an issue discussed over and over again. Okay. I know it's been studied over and over again.
I'll do this.
It's like I'm just struggling with how we move forward at this point.
I know. We've been here on this issue more times than we've been here with the sales tax. And we always start out with a good idea about talking about how do you get services, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
and always falls apart over the regionalization or the change in boundaries. And that's where I thought this had some merit in that you wouldn't do that. You'd make the superintendent sit down with the districts and see if they needed to change boundaries. But you would lay out the concept of getting the service, the regional service concept, and so that every... Now there are districts calling other ESDs for services they can't get inside their own ESD. That goes on now. But as you... You know, you guys see the one house. I don't think you both have passed it, but one of you has passed a bill that says we're going to make all kids take 4 years of English and 3 years of math before they graduate high school.
The House passed that bill.
Okay. It's a great idea. But most kids do that now. The ones that don't are the ones that are going to have a heck of a time getting it done. It's going to take more resources, more effort, et cetera, to do that, and you may regionalize and help save to get some of that done. But as you pass more and more demands on performance, we're going to have to work on different, because you're not expanding resources to meet the new demands. And that's what it's all about. We don't like the bill. We don't like the change in the formula. It's too late to change budgets.
And how do you really feel, Mr. Rose?
I can go pick all the testimony apart. I came back thinking I was going to really make a contribution to help this argument, and instead I haven't had grandkids. But there is a need for better regional services in a way that will help every kid in Oregon succeed. But it's not about the scandals, or it's not about this. It's about focusing on developing that system that serves every kid in Oregon. Some of the kids in the little school districts aren't going to be able to get 4 years of math and 3 years of English, or whichever way it goes. Some in the big districts. But we're saying we want them to do that. I'll shut up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. We appreciate your input. Ms. Fleming, I don't know if you want to add anything from the departments. I just know that you participated in the work group and been sort of an integral part of this, and just thought it would be good to hear from you.
Thank you, Senator Brown. For the record, Vicki Fleming, Deputy Superintendent at the Oregon Department of Education. I was a member of the work group. I have been working with the collective of ESD superintendents for almost 2 years now.
Well known as the Borg, right?
Regardless of whether you pass a piece of legislation, we will continue to march forward on that renewed, reinvigorated, reinvented partnership, primarily for the reasons that Mr. Rose stated, and that is that we have this interesting piece of legislation from the federal government called No Child Left Behind, which has really effectively changed the skill set needed at the state agency and has As you know, we've reorganized the department, and we predicated that reorganization largely on our ability to have a regional delivery system that worked better for many reasons, one being performance management. If there is a kid at the end of this equation, which there is, how is it that we use the resources that we have, because we don't have new ones, more effectively to help districts and schools improve to meet the needs of each and every student in Oregon better? And this piece of legislation has things in it that have polarized and presented some barriers in terms of our conversations with moving that regional delivery system forward. It has things that would help us move that system forward and clarify it. And so my job is to work with both of those ends of the continuum. Be happy to answer any questions specifically. I think the one thing I wanted to comment about the earlier testimony is that this is a very populous state. We're into local control. If you were the corporate manager of FedEx and you wanted to start a branch in Oregon and you wanted to deliver packages from Portland all over the state, how is it that you would set up a supply chain and a management structure that will allow that to happen? We're attempting to answer the same question. It's not about the State Department controlling anything. It's not about locally elected school boards, really. It's about how do you get the technical assistance, the support, the effective management of the educational enterprise from where it is now to where it needs to be. And I think there's a lot of clarity in here about the business case or the business requirements around the capacity for a regional system that is good and will be helpful. If not codified, at least will be helpful in terms of moving us forward to create that hub system that works from where I sit. By its very nature, an intermediary organization serves at least two masters. And if you sit where I sit, you got a lot more than that. So it's the nature of the beast.
Thank you. Mr. Rose, did
you
want to
make one more point? The first pages of this, I'll say it again. The first three pages where they talk about what a regional agency is supposed to do and had the capacity to do, that was developed by a committee that represented about 8 of the 20 superintendents, and it is a thoughtful piece of work. That's what this discussion should really be about. And I'd like them to get that on the record, something that they did to contribute to this. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Manager.
Sir Ringo.
Just like Ozzie and I have talked a lot about this, and I think we have some disagreements, and I'm not going to beat up on you here, but I think we do agree there needs to be some changes to ESDs, and it's maybe getting that nailed down is the challenge. I was going to ask if I could meet with both of you outside of the room, because I don't want to take more committee time right now, but just to run another idea by you, if we could do that right after the gavel on this bill, if that's okay.
That's fine. Thank you both. We appreciate you joining us. Appreciate your willingness to volunteer testimony, Ms. Fleming.
How do you like my sensitivity to nonverbal communication?
You're very good, Mr. Rose, but I would expect nothing less after your many years in this building. Okay. If I could find my gavel, try not to hit anybody. 3184. Let's take a 5-minute recess while we change committee staff people. Open a work session on House Bill 3037. Ms. Harris, why don't you tell us about the measure?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. House Bill 3037 amends the statutes governing aggravated murder. The bill expands those statutes to include the murder of a witness in a juvenile proceeding. By way of background, those statutes currently apply to witnesses in adult proceedings. We have two amendments before us. The Dash 3 amendment would add reserve police officers to the aggravated murder statute, and the Dash 4 amendment would make it an aggravated murder to kill a pregnant woman where the defendant knows or reasonably should have known that the woman is pregnant.
Thank you. Ms. Harris, Sarah Atkinson.
Will we in work session?
Yes.
Move the Dash 3.
Sarah Atkinson moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3037. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. The chair would move the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 3037. Any discussion?
Oh, wait. This is Dash 4 is the... Which one is that? That's the one on a woman, a pregnant woman.
Correct.
Are we going to have any testimony or any discussion at all? None?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I'll...
We had a public hearing on both the underlying bill and the issue.
Okay, I'll...
Okay. Senator Shields votes a no, seeing no other objection. Dash 4 amendments carried. Chair would move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. The chair does not do this lightly. I am extremely concerned about expanding the death penalty. I'm concerned about its discriminatory impact, that it's not a deterrent, cost more than life in prison, and we risk the death of innocent people. That being said, also very aware that statutes as we now have it are inconsistent. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I would share your concerns that you just mentioned, an expansion of the death penalty. And I also have concerns about the Dash 4. But I do thank the chair for moving the Dash 3 as a fairness issue. And with reservation, I will still support the entire bill.
And Madam Chair, I'd say I appreciate you listing those issues. I've arrived at my position on the death penalty because I do think it's discriminatory in a lot of ways and it's not a deterrent to crime. And sometimes innocent people die. So I thank you for making your the points you've made. We can have more discussion on the floor, I'm sure.
Sir Perrielli.
Madam Chair, I just would like to put on the record that it seems to me to be a matter of significant courage to confront the issues that you are confronting in this bill. But it also, to me, seems like a matter of compelling duty to protect those in law enforcement who are that protect and serve, whether they are reserve officers or fully sworn and full-time law enforcement personnel. I believe absolutely that there should be an increase of penalty for those who knowingly harm a pregnant woman, and I believe absolutely that those young people in our community that accept the full responsibility of their citizenship and step forward to bear witness against those in our community who committed crimes deserve the full protection of the law. And I think that those are very compelling issues, and I salute the chair for her motion.
Any further discussion? Motion was to move the bill. Sarah Shields will be recorded as an objection. Motion carries. We'll talk about a carrier later. And I think this is a wake-up call for this body and hopefully the legislature to have some serious conversations about the death penalty. Thank you. Any further business to come before the committee? With that, we're adjourned.